Hare Krishna. Nandagaon is the eternal home of Sri Krishna Balaramji. In this very place where we are sitting, Nanda Maharaj made his home. And here Nanda Yashoda, Rohini Devi, they raise lovingly Sri Krishna Balaramji as their own children. Lord Shiva prayed with his heart and soul that he could accept a very humble position to serve Lord Krishna's pastimes. And he was always eager to have the dust of the feet of the Lord and his devotees on his head. Thus he took birth as this hill, which is called Nandeshwar. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Lord Vishnu or Krishna is Govardhan Hill. Lord Brahma has appeared as the hill of Varsana, and Shankar Bhagavan has appeared as Nandeshwar. There are many, many holy places surrounding Nandagaon. Just below the hill is Uddhava Kyari, where Uddhava met the Braja Gopis and heard Srimati Radharani reveal the infinite nature of her pure love while speaking to a bumblebee. There is also Terakadamba, a very, very sacred kadamba tree. Krishna would climb that kadamba tree and play his flute, and then he would call his cows, and each would come running to meet him just around the time of sunset. Srila Rupa Goswami made his bhajan kutir at Terakadamba, which was also a meeting place of Sri Radha and Krishna. When he would write literatures describing the separation of Radha and Krishna, the Kadamba tree would respond by shedding incessant tears in the form of its leaves and flowers. And when he would discuss the meetings of Radha and Krishna, the tree would blossom with unlimited leaves and flowers. Nearby is also Kokilaban. Kokilaban is the place where Krishna would sing very sweetly, like a kokila or cuckoo bird, and thus attract Sri Radharani and the gopis could come to meet him at that place. On this hill there is Yashoda Kund, the bathing place of Yashoda, where she would personally bathe Krishna. There is Halbalao, when Krishna would be naughty, Yashoda Mai would threaten that if you do not come home at this very time, a very, very horrible, monstrous demon is going to come to eat you. And they didn't believe their mother. There was such thing as Hau Balau. So one day, she just screamed and said, Hau Balau is coming! She screamed and started running as fast as she could run. Krishna Balaram never saw her like that before. So they came running behind her, scared as anything, and came back to here. And they were sitting with Nanda Maharaj taking prasad, saying, you should have seen this Hau Balau. He had big, big teeth and gigantic mouth and red eyes. And he came to eat us, but somehow we got away. So there's deities of the Hau Balau. There's Nanda Baitak, the assembly hall of Nanda Maharaj, where he would meet with the senior leaders of the Nandagaon community. And all they would discuss is how to best arrange their community life for the protection, for the health, and for the happiness of Krishna. There is Garden of Nanda Maharaj, where Krishna and Balaram would perform such very, very sweet, beautiful pastimes. Below the hill where we will be going after this is Pavan Sarovar. Pavan Sarovar was the bathing place of Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, bathing place of Krishna and Balaram. They would also bring their cows to drink the nectar and water of that kund. It is also the place where Sri Radharani and her gopis would every day cook wonderful meals for Lord Krishna. Just on the banks of Pavan Sarovar is the Bhajan Kutir of Srila Sanatan Goswami. Deeply immersed in the highest ecstasies of Krishna Prema, he would chant the holy names, offer prayers, meditate, and write transcendental literatures out of his unlimited compassion for all souls. Also near Pavan Sarovar is the Samadhi Mandir of Srila Prabhupada's very dear godbrother, Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj had such profound attachment to the holy name. Day and night he chanted. I lived with him for some time, about 30 years ago. In fact, exactly 30 years ago. And I remember all day long he would just sit and chant bhajans. And any time of the night you went by his room, you heard him loudly chanting japa. Constantly chanting. He performed the kirtan during Prabhupada's sannyas ceremony, and he led the kirtan procession at the time. Dandavat Goswamiji. Let us all thank Goswamiji so much for coming and joining us today. Goswamiji and his family have for many years been very dear friends of our Radha Gopinath temple in Bombay. Would you like to speak something?
ठाकुर जी के श्री अग्नि को चंदन राधे राधे मंदिर प्रांगण में महाराज श्री और जितने भी भक्त वृंद पधारे हैं नंदलाल की तरफ से सबका स्वागत है। नंद बाबा, यशोदा मैया, बलराम, श्री कृष्ण और जितने भी सपरिवार नंद भवन के परकर जितने भी हैं गोस्वामी वृंद, हम सब बड़े प्रसन्न हैं कि इतने भक्त वृंदों के चरण आज नंद भवन में पधारे हैं और आशा करते हैं कि इसी तरह से आप प्रतिवर्ष जब भी समय मिले यहाँ आते रहे और नंदलाल को आशीर्वाद देते रहे। क्यों? कि भक्तों के आशीर्वाद से ही नंदलाल फलते फूलते हैं। जितने भी भक्त वृंद यहाँ आते हैं वो कहते हैं रानी तेरे चिरजी और गोपाल, यशोदा मैया को कहते हैं हे यशोदा रानी तेरा गोपाल जो है वो चिरंजीव रहे। तो हम से आशा करते हैं हमारे जो बाल गोपाल नंदलाल है आप सब ऐसा आशीर्वाद दे कि वो जो है उनको कोई नजर गुजर ना लगे और जो है सदा आनंद फलते फूलते रहे। श्री राधे।
During Prabhupada's procession, before they placed his body in Samadhi, they took him throughout Vrindavan to all the seven Gaudiya Vaishnava temples, and it was Srila Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj who led Srila Prabhupada in that procession. He left his body on the banks of Pavan Sarovar. Nandagaon is an ocean of holy places. Every atomic particle of this place is surcharged with the Leela of Sri Krishna Balaram. And how fortunate we are to be here today. In Krishna's own home, his eternal home. It was from here that he would be woken up by Yashoda Mai and play his buffalo horn and call his friends, and they would all gather here and take their lunch bags and go out into the pasture grounds with the cows. Gopastami was celebrated here. This is the place Krishna was given charge of cows. And to this very day, one of the biggest of all festivals of Nandagaon is Gopastami. Devotees from all over Brajbhumi come here to celebrate in a wonderful, wonderful way. Because the feeling of the Brijavasis is not that Krishna is a historical incarnation that lived 5,000 years ago somewhere, But the Brijavasis feel that Krishna is living forever as their friend, as their only shelter. That Sri Radharani and Krishna are living amongst them, and their lives are simply to please them. And actually, the concept of the worship of the Archivigraha, or the deity, is to give us that sense. In whatever part of the world we may be living, we worship the deity. And the idea is Radha and Krishna are living in our house. Whether it's the temple of the spiritual master that we all gather to offer our united prayers and devotion, or whether it is our own home. When we place the murti in the home, we should be conscious that Radha and Krishna, or Gornitai, they are living with us. They are non-different than their deity. And therefore everything we say, everything we do, it should all be with the consciousness that it's for the pleasure of Krishna. He is here. He is with us. This is the Brijavasi spirit. All singing, all dancing, all speaking, everything is for Krishna. And even when the Brijavasis do their work, either in the fields, or in their shops, or as teachers, it's with consciousness that Krishna's here, and it is all for Radharani and Krishna's pleasure. This is the essence of bhakti, to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. And Vrindavan is that place where everyone is remembering Krishna in the most intimate mood of complete surrender. Janani Vas Prabhu, one who is living in the holy dham of Sri Mayapur, which is non-different than Vrindavan, has been personally serving Sri Radha Madhava for about 30 years. Can you imagine living in the holy dham 24 hours a day in the personal service of the Lord? Actually, when Srila Prabhupada was in his last weeks of his lila at Sri Krishna Balaramji Mandir in Ramanreti, Vrindavan, in the middle of the night, sometime around midnight, he asked his assistant, "Bring me the pujari." So pujari was laying somewhere on a roof, and this person had to be looking through the dark all over the place. Somehow he found the pujari sleeping. He woke him up. Said, "Prabhupada wants to see you now." So the pujari, whose name was Omkar Prabhu, he was shocked. Midnight, Prabhupada's calling for him. He was thinking, what did I do wrong? So he came running to Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada looked at him with great love. He said, "The pujari is most fortunate, because he is always so close to Krishna." Omkar said, "Is anything else?" Prabhupada said, "No, you can go." This is Prabhupada's heart. So how close to Krishna is dear Goswamiji, his eldest son? and they have such love and affection for our devotees, and they're always so merciful to me. I am very, very grateful. Thank you. We would like to hear the divine words of Janani Vas Prabhu at this time in the personal home of Lord Shri Krishna and Lord Shri Balaram. In the corner is the Nandeshwar Mahadev Mandir, just in this very courtyard where Parjanya, the grandfather of Nanda Maharaj, and his children worship this deity of Shiva to have Krishna as their son.
Ganan Chimidan Dasha, Ganan Ganan Shalakya, Takshur and Manitanjina Tashmai Sri Guru. Mama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Putari, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Shamin Itinamani, Namasti Sarasati Devi, Gauravani Pracharini, Nidhishisha Shanyavadi, Pashtat Chadeshatari, Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Adaita Gadadaha Shiva Shari Gaura Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari. Hare. Sri Nandagram ki jai, Sri Nandatulal ki jai. So I think one thing we're learning very much on this prakram, as Radhanath Maharaj was saying, is that when we see the devotion of these inhabitants of Vrindavan, the complete faith they have in Krishna, they take water from the sarovars, they drink it, they just knock away the grain and they just drink it as if it was nectar. They have complete faith in everything they do. Not ritualistically, like I am trying to imitate, but you can see they have complete faith in the holy Dharma of Vrindavan as being the eternal abode of Krishna. So here Krishna would awaken in the morning and he would go to milk the cows, Nanda. And after that he would come back and Mother Jasoda would give him a bath. Of aguru scent on his body. Krishna's body always smells of aguru, because he would take a massage with aguru before his bath. And she would dress him in so many nice colorful clothing, with yellow dhoti, different ornamentations, flute, stick, bugles. And she would give prasad to Krishna. This was actually a great feast. That song we chant for the Bhogarti. Shukha shakaya di bhaji nalita kushmando dalidana dugda tambita di mochagan mudra bora masra bora roti kakritana shashkuli pistaka kira kuli payasha. Going on and on and on describing so much of the Japana Bhog that Krishna used to take every morning before he left. And that was only a small portion mentioned in that song. So this actually took place earlier on in the day. It wasn't actually at midday, because Krishna will be out in the fields at midday. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for our sakes, because we usually cook, we have time to cook by midday and get everything ready and we can offer it. So it's been included in the Bhog Aarti ceremony. We may also think that how come, I mean, we don't have time to cook that much early in the morning. We can cook it by midday, perhaps. Some 56 items sometimes, like for Jagannath. So how can they cook for Krishna so much, so early in the morning? So you know that Srimati Radharani had a benediction from one Devarshi Muni, not the mystic Devarshi Muni who chased Ambarish Maharaj, but there's another Devarshi Muni. And he was allowed to participate in the pastime of Radharani by giving her a benediction for his purification. That whatever she cooked would be just like nectar. So Jasoda had heard about this. So she told Jatila that you must send your daughter every day to Nanda's house to cook for Krishna. And because Jasoda was the queen of Vrindavan, then they were obliged to follow her orders. And also, Purnamasi had been instructed Jatila, because Purnamasi was like the guru of the village. Whatever Purnamasi said, she is authority. So she would tell Jatila that whatever Mother Jasoda tells you, you must do without fail. If you do that, you'll get so many cows, your son will become really rich, so much opulence will be yours. You will get all facilities if you simply serve Jasoda, whatever she said.
Oh yes.
We'll get very rich, get many cows, everything, we'll have good health. Okay. So, in this way she understood that Srimati Radharani would come to cook for Krishna. So, Nandamukhi, Krishna's cousin, niece, Nandamukhi, she would go to Mashana to bring Srimati Radharani every morning. And she would say, come, we're coming to cook for Krishna, you have to cook for Krishna. And Srimati Radharani would act very shyly before her elders and she would look down, no, I cannot go, how can I go there? I'm only a young girl. How can I be alone in that place? No, we'll look after you, we'll be there. And Jatila says, yes, you must go. But be very, very careful of that Krishna. And Nandamukhi, you must completely take care of Radharani and never let her in the sight of that Krishna. Nandamukhi says, Mother, I promise with my very heart and soul, I don't even let Krishna's shadow, I won't even let Krishna see Radharani's shadow. I promise you that. We will look after her so well. And then Radharani, because you're ordering me, I have to go. My duty is actually here to serve my husband. Okay, somehow or another, I will go. Her heart is full of joy, wanting to come to Nanda Maharaj. And then they quickly run to here to see Krishna. And cook for Krishna. And Jasoda is here. She has many stoves prepared. And she's in complete anxiety. Oh, Radharani hasn't shown up yet. if she doesn't come quickly, then she won't be able to cook so much. Krishna won't be able to eat so much. He'll get so hungry. He's going to be out all day in the pasturing grounds. He's going to get so hungry. What will she do if she's late? And then somehow or another she shows up. She sees Srimati Radhika coming and she embraces her. And she says, don't be shy. You're like my very own daughter. I see you as none different my own daughter. She kisses her all over and she smothers her in affection. And says, yes, we will start the cooking. So Jasoda has 50 stoves burning at one time. And lots of Srimati Rani's Shaktis come and they're all there making, grinding the spices and cutting sabjis and making the doughs and things, all working. And Srimati Radhiyan is there and she's running from one stove to another. And all the Shakas are there giving all the ingredients and she's frying in. And like this, she's cooking so many preparations. Rohini Devi is also there. She's very good at cooking sweets. She's also making a lot of sweets for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said that Srimati Radharani has been cooking for Krishna every day since eternity. And she will continue. Today she is cooking. And every day she will cook to eternity. All those preparations every day, he said, but still, never one time did she make the same preparation twice. She always makes a variation for Krishna's pleasure. So she makes this fantastic feast for Krishna. Then Jasoda will call Krishna and Balaram and their friends, some of their friends are there. And they will sit down, they wash their hands, and they will sit down and they will begin to serve all the different types of prasads. First all the bitter things and fried things and wet sabjis and dry sabjis and different things with curds and 12 chutneys and then different kinds of sweets. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in his Bhogarti song how Srimati Radharani and her friends are all peeping around the corner looking at Krishna eating the prasad. Madhu Mangala is eating the laddus and making sounds with his arms, flapping his arms, and making funny sounds, and making everyone laugh. Then Krishna, he detects Srimati Radharani, she's peeping around the corner. Ah, then he starts to go all gooey. And loses interest in eating and he just starts picking at his prasad and he's not eating healthily like he was before. And then just sort of saying, oh Krishna, why he's not eating? Why he's not eating? Krishna, eat, you're going to be out a whole day. Why he's not eating? And Madhu Mangali says, look, just give me some more laddus. I give you some blessings, you will eat plenty. Oh yes, please take many as you want, Madhu Mangal. Please give my son blessings so he can eat so much prasad. So there's actually another meeting of Radha and Krishna before this takes place. It's at a Pavan Sarovar at the bottom of the hill. And there's a secret passageway from here. It goes all the way down the back way. It's all covered in trees and bushes. But Krishna, early morning, he goes on that passageway and he quickly goes down to Pavana Sarovar. And sometimes Srimati Radharani coming there to take a bath early morning. And so they will have a quick meeting there. She will bathe the other side, Krishna will bathe this side. But sometimes he will swim underwater and nobody can see him anymore. Then he would swim right up to Radharani and he would make her jump. She would think some big turtles in the water or something here. Then he would swim back undetected. So they would take their prasad and wash their hands and mouth. And then they would take rest for some minutes. Krishna's the Bhojanalaya, where Krishna, his Bhogamandir, where he takes the prasad, it's 100 steps from his bedroom. You may have heard the saying that after prasad you should take 100 steps before you lay down for digestion. So we know where that's coming from. Krishna took 100 steps. And he would be given tambulam, pan, and different spices to chew. And his friends would fan him while he rested for some time. Then after a short time they'd all get up and gather all the friends and go out to take all the cows, all the calves to the forest. That time the whole village would come out with Krishna, being unable to take their eyes off Krishna. And Maharaj was just discussing how this very famous place for Gopashtami festival, because that was the first day that when Krishna reached the Puganda age, he took the calves out. That time all the villages they followed him was right into the jungles, across the fields, and all the gopis, they would lift up their dresses because there was long grasses and bushes, so they would lift up their dresses when they walked through. So on many temples you see on this occasion that Radharani will show her feet on this day. Radharani and the gopis, they would all show their feet to commemorate this day when they went through the long grasses with Krishna. And then Krishna would go in a big procession with his friends, playing their bugles, buffalo horns, flutes. And they would start to enter the forest areas. Bindu Devi there was there. She was the queen of the forest. So she will go before Krishna's coming. She goes, "Hey, wake up, wake up, wake up, quickly, Krishna's coming." The forest would suddenly wake up because last time they saw Krishna, he had left and they all fell in complete separation. Lost everything there. They felt no need to display their opulences of fruits and flowers. All the flowers closed up and everything seemed to wilt, and they all became, all the color kind of drained out of everything, and they were, but as soon as Krishna, again, the flowers started springing out and the buds and the fruits and everything started awakening springtime again, because Krishna was coming again. So in this way Krishna would spend his day in the pasturing grounds and come back early evening. Wandering around. Come back covered in dust. His hair was all dusty. come back just before sunset. That is, it's called Gavoshnan. If you can take a bath from the dust raised by the hoofs of the calves at sunset, the very, very purifying shnan. It's one of the auspicious baths to take. That is because Krishna was coming home at that time and covered in that dust of from the calves, the cows. It's called Gavoshnan. So he will come home and enliven all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who are simply absorbed in remembering Krishna whole day during his absence. They will be churning their butter. But they're thinking, I hope Krishna will come to my house today and steal his butter. Their only thoughts are about Krishna. And then suddenly Krishna would appear and they would hear the flutes of the boys and everybody would come in live and the soul would be in complete anxiety. Nanda Baba, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? He hasn't come back. Maybe something's happened again. Oh, it's early. Look, the sun is still way up in the sky. No, it's getting late. You climb up the tree, see if Krishna's coming. So he would get Nanda Baba to climb up the tree and see if Krishna... No, go higher, go to the top of the tree, he must be coming soon. And then they would see the dust coming out from the cows. And, he's coming, Krishna's coming. And again, a great festival would happen in the village. The cows would come, and the calves were jumping and springing and taking milk from their mothers, and the mothers were getting their children, embracing them, and take them in, giving everyone the bath. Feeding them nice prasad. And then before rest they would have some village entertainment. Someone was telling us is it Vashana? How they have some village entertainment. Some juggler came. Who was that? Didn't you remember? The juggler came and he was spinning some things around. That's also mentioned that there was things like that. They would have jugglers come and acrobats, and they would do some, Gaurav men would do some entertainment in the evening. Now they have another entertainment which is very unfortunate. That is the television. No, it's very, very unfortunate. And, you know, Padmalochana Prabhu, he was here for years in the early 70s, just wandering around and around. And he said so many of these villages he was in, they would have so many festivals, so many festivals. And then he came back 20 years later, because I think it was Rajiv Gandhi, he didn't want the people of Indian villages to be backward. He wanted them to have a worldwide vision, so he gave them all television so they could have watched Star TV and become advanced. And he said since that time actually, then the performance of these festivals and nobody's coming out. He said it was very, very hard, it really hurt him to see that, how the culture is being destroyed by this television. Yeah. But otherwise they would have festivals every night and every now and major festivals. But every night there will be some kind of entertainment for the village men. And Krishna would watch this and then he would get tired and so his mother would put him to sleep. And then later on he would also jump out the window and back window and perform go and see Srimata Radharani's friends again, the prearranged place. So all these pastimes are taking place here every day. yesterday doing the Govardhan Parikram, I was very much disappointed that I didn't get any thorns in my foot. Everybody tells me, whenever you do Govardhan Parikram, you get a thorn. I didn't get one thorn in my foot. But I was reflecting, when Maharaj was telling us about the glories of the ecstasy of getting thorns in your foot. A million times greater than the ecstasy of Brahman. And it's a fact that when we do get thorns in our foot, but the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they were thinking that Krishna is out, he's wandering around with his friends, and he may get thorns in his feet, he may get stains on the small stones. And their hearts were feeling so much affected by remembering Krishna's lotus feet wandering around in the forest as a small child. So when we get thorns, it can evoke that memory of the inhabitants in Vrindavan, how they think of Krishna's lotus feet as he's wandering around. And the dust. So much dust we're experiencing. But we should also remember, when we get so much choked with dust, that great devotees like Lord Brahma, they wanted to take birth here, simply to be covered by that dust. Uddhava. They're longing just to... Lord Brahma said, when he was offering his prayers to Krishna, that I would like to take my next birth here, but I may not be so fortunate to be able to take my birth here. But anyway, let me take my birth on the outskirts of Vrindavan at least. Because sometimes some of the coward people will be wandering around there, and some of the dust of their feet may fall upon me. And then I will consider that a glorious birth for me. So even the so-called inconveniences here, like the thorns and the dust, it simply evokes memory of Krishna for us. We hear how the great devotees are thinking, and it immediately reminds us, evokes our own Krishna consciousness in our heart. So everything here is blissful. Even the so-called suffering becomes bliss. So as long as we can always remain Krishna consciousness, then that doesn't matter where we are. We're in different cities around the world. But Prabhupada has taught us, no, if you remember Krishna, that is also Dham. Dham is not simply a location, Vrindavan or Mayapur. It's actually a state of mind. So you can be in serving in cities, but if you are Krishna conscious, then that is also Dham, that state of mind. But when we actually come here and we see the state of mind of the devotees here, their condition, of the Vrajabhashis, how they're so much devotion they're exhibiting, then that gives us so much more enthusiasm and encouragement to become Krishna conscious like them. Just reflecting on Radhanath Maharaj's statement about worshipping the deity, that Srila Prabhupada said, we are so fortunate to be able to worship the deity. He also made another statement another time. That the devotees, when they leave their body, they go to that particular planet where Krishna is performing his pastime. Then they get direct association with Krishna, and then the further training. And then from there they go back to Golok, back to Godhead. He said, but the pujaris, they don't even have to go there. He said, already they're associating with Krishna. So from that position they go straight back home, back to Godhead. They are most fortunate. So Srila Prabhupada has given us all of us, we're all pujaris, because every day we go to see Radha Gopinathji, Radha Madhav. We all worship. Worship is not only twiddling the incense, but worship means the dancing, the chanting, the congregation. It's all part of worship. It wouldn't be complete without the congregation and the reciprocation. So we should consider ourselves eternally grateful to that. Greatest inhabitant of Vrindavan, whom we are following is so closely in his footsteps, that Srila Prabhupada. Nitai go premanandi. Thank you very much. Shri Nanda Dulala ki. Nanda Baba ki. Shodamai ki. Very well. Thank you.
Oh, you don't have to worry about that. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavani Pashchadya Desha Tharine. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We just heard a very nice explanation of some of the pastimes between the gopas and the gopis and Krishna, all the innermost associates of Lord Krishna, by Jananivas, Haribo, for my basis is at the dust of his lotus feet, for such a nice explanation. When we look at the kind of events that are a part of devotional life, parikrams, sadhana, japa, artik, so many different things we do as devotees, we see that we're trying to become part of a spiritual culture. That's actually our goal. We're trying to become part of a spiritual culture, which helps us to remember and reawaken a deeper level of appreciation for Krishna. Actually, it's amazing that we live in a world which is completely made up of nothing but the energies of Krishna. We know, bhumir apo nalo vayu kammana buddhir evacha. So we know, bhumir apo nalo vayu kammana buddhir evacha. Ahankara itiyame bina prakritir ashtada. The key word here is bina, which means separated. So in this verse from the Bhagavad Gita, we hear about separated energies of Krishna. There's so many separated energies from Krishna, but actually nothing can be separated from Krishna. So we live in a world that basically is Krishna in every essence. All the atoms, all the activities and everything are in fact all coming from Krishna. But some are separated and some are direct. Some are coming from his internal potency and some are coming from his external potency. So in one sense we stand in a crossroads or in a junction point where we can either appreciate the activities of Krishna and his culture, which helps us to awaken our original relationship with Krishna, or we can turn our face toward the other culture of the vacuum culture, the garbage culture of Western society, which tells us to forget about Krishna, forget about religion, and simply enjoy the senses to their fullest extent. And in that, we'll find actual fulfillment. So, everywhere we see that there are opportunities for doing either thing. Actually, why is Krishna doing so many pastimes? Because he's trying to attract our hearts in various ways. He's trying to attract us back home, back to Godhead. And in these various types of pastimes, he is able to attract us in different ways. Because we're different and we have different ways of relating to things. So he's coming up with so many wonderful pastimes that attract the heart in one way or another. And he's very expert. He has so many different techniques, so many different ways. Actually, I've been thinking about the last few days, this land of Brajabhumi, quite large. It's much larger than I ever imagined it would be, having traveled around it. I came here to Vrindavan one time, long, long time ago, in 1978, the year after Prabhupada left the world. And I didn't actually travel through Brajabhumi. I simply was in Vrindavan for a little while. And most of that time, I spent just in Krishna Balaram Mandir. I didn't even hardly go out. I remember one time we went out to the place where Krishna took the gopis' clothes, Kshirgat, but it wasn't the one that was farther away. It was the one that was closer. And that's basically my whole memory of Vrindavan back then. But having had the opportunity to actually go out through Brajabhumi and see all the different things here, I'm amazed at the varieties of people, the varieties of food, the colors, the rocks, the animals. I mean, in most places in the world, you don't see such variety. Krishna definitely made a special place to weave his own pastimes into. He made not a usual place. And you could imagine that if God was going to do something, he would do something in a very wonderful, exemplary, extraordinary, very multidimensional way. And certainly he's done that with Brajabhumi. Govardhan Hill yesterday, so attractive, just the colors, the animals. We see things you don't see anywhere. I don't know if you see kadamba trees anywhere else. I'm sure you see them other places in India, but they certainly don't have kadamba trees in America as far as I know. Maybe they do somewhere. But they don't have so many different things, different kinds of fruit here. I keep seeing people selling things and I wonder, what on earth is that? Where did it come from? What is it? What must it taste like? Why do people like it? And of course, we read things in Krishna book and we wonder, what in the world is an amalaki fruit? What in the world? I mean, you have to understand this from the perspective of someone coming from, you know, a culture of Captain Kangaroo and so many other, you know, things of the Western world. We come from a culture where these things are completely unknown. And we come here and we start to see that there are so many varieties we never dreamt even existed. And Krishna's attracting us with these. And it's so amazing to see so much diversity. Because actually, Prabhupada used to say that variety is the spice of life, I believe is how the saying goes. Variety is the spice of life. That so many different varieties are there, and these varieties make things interesting. They make life interesting. And certainly, Krishna didn't make a dull place. He made a place that was full of all kinds of varieties, all kinds of varieties of every sort. So, by these festivals, actually, when you think about it, as Vaishnavas, we have so many festivals. Practically speaking, every 5 or 6 days, some kind of festival comes about on the average, and during Kartik, practically every other day, some kind of festival. So we can recognize that we can help. It's like a sugar coating. You know, sometimes people are very sick and they have to get medicine. And most of the time when we get medicine, we think, this is horrible. You know, I don't. And most kinds of medicine actually are horrible, at least to the taste, you know. You take it and you feel this really terrible taste, and you wish, gosh, I wish I wouldn't I be able to stop taking this medicine. It has a really, almost makes you wretch sometimes. But in the Western world also, I think Ayurvedic medicine, they do the same thing. I notice they mix some kind of sweeteners with the various kinds of preparations. And sometimes there was a saying in the Western world, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. So sometimes they add some sweetening to the medicine so it's not so bitter, it doesn't actually taste so obnoxious. So in the unfolding of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and the activities of Parikram and the activities of devotional life, we're actually seeing the medicine is being sweetened, especially in Parikram. We see so many things that we can relate to, things that charm us in one way or another. And we can appreciate more and more Krishna and his pastimes. And this way we're being hooked back to our original position. Because the basis of all Krishna's pastimes, you know, whatever they are, all of his relationships, all the things, is love. That's the fundamental, foundational platform of all of Krishna's activities. It's love. So even if we're talking about something like separation, which seems to be kind of almost antithetical to love, actually it's not. Everything is based on the platform of love. And somehow Krishna's trying to awaken that. So the conditioned soul feels the necessity to keep his distance from Krishna. Conditioned soul feels a necessity to be suspicious of Krishna. Conditioned soul feels a necessity to feel angry at Krishna, to feel insulted by Krishna, feeling of wanting to be somehow even indifferent to Krishna. Conditioned soul has all these kinds of tendencies. And to get rid of these tendencies takes a kind of medicine, which is the sadhana that we do every day, chanting the holy name. And sometimes we get a chance to come on Parikram, where we actually go where Krishna is woven into the fabric of everything. Everything has some story to tell about Krishna. Everyone that's living here grew up with Krishna's pastimes instead of growing up with Captain Kangaroo and bubblegum and Coca-Cola. Everyone here grew up with those. Of course, nowadays, I think everybody's growing up with Captain Kangaroo and Coca-Cola and bubblegum. But at any rate, unfortunately, those things are making their way in. But we have the ability to choose which culture we want to take part in. We have the freedom to be able to make a choice on a day-to-day level, on a longer level. We can become part of either thing. We can actually take part in Krishna's Leela, try to understand it, take part in, or we can sit back and let the television have its leela for us, you know. That's unfortunately what people do. In the Western world, people are called couch potatoes, which means they're like a potato, big potato that sits on a couch, because television just has your life for you. You don't have to do anything. You just sit there with eyes open and everything happens in front of you. And you don't even have to do anything in life. You just sort of sit there and everything passes before you. And then you go to sleep and you eat something while you're watching television. So this is kind of a useless sort of life. And I think a lot of times people see television and they think, well, if I played some music, it wouldn't be as nice as it would be on television. If I did something, it wouldn't be as full-blown as they do it on television. If I had a little festival in my backyard, it wouldn't be as nice as they have festivals on television. So everybody gives up trying to do anything because they know on television it'll be better. And so it gives people this inertia, this sense of, I don't want to do anything, I'll just sit here. And then whatever it is, it'll be much better on television. So, unfortunately, this is kind of the passive way that the Western world is going. And television increases your desire for things that are not good, things that take us away. This is not very much wanted. And that's the culture that's unfortunately being assimilated, not only in India, but in everywhere in the world. I was in Thailand at one time, and I see that there you have, you know, pretty much 2,000 years of Buddhist culture is being thrown in the wastebasket overnight so they can have motorbikes and t-shirts and soda pop and bubble gum. So those things are possible there. So it's not really wanted, but it's coming in all over the world. But we can still take part in Krishna's pastimes, and we can appreciate that here is a culture where you do it yourself. You actually engage in the activities yourself. It's three-dimensional, it's real, it's alive. You touch things, you smell things, you cook things, you taste things. You hear things, you meet people, you have relationships. It isn't all happening in some kind of electronic netherworld, you know. It's actually real. And somehow or other, Krishna is attracting us. Somehow or another, Krishna has allowed us to come here. I feel very fortunate that somehow I had an opportunity to see the place where Krishna's pastimes are. Yogamaya potency is everywhere. Bina Prakriti Ashtana. But here, it's a little thinner than it is in a lot of other places. It's a little bit thinned out, where you can see Krishna in the cracks of things. It's easier to see how Krishna is related to everything here. Of course, Yogamaya potency is still there, so I look at the deity, and do I actually see the deity, or do I see where the finger was once broken, or where Pujari didn't quite finish the mouth quite nicely with the paint, or whatever it is? What do we really look at? Are we looking at the defects? Are we looking at what actually is underneath there? Because even here, anywhere we see the Yogamaya potency has that ability to distance us from Krishna in some kind of way, to move us one step back. So this is not really what we want. I had a realization about a couple of days ago, which is kind of an unusual realization. I'll tell it shortly, then I'll be done so that we can move on to the next thing. But actually, I was, after Radhanaswami was speaking, I was beginning to think, I was appreciating the sewage in the holy places. And I was thinking, of course, what is sewage actually? What is the, what's running in the gutters? It's obnoxious stuff. It's the sum of every unwanted thing. And that's why it strikes our senses so negatively, because it's the remnants that are not needed anymore after you cook something. It's the throw off of the body, the things the body can't use. Body assimilates so many edibles and then takes its poisons and unusable things and excretes them. It's the excretion of other animals. It's also the things that get left behind when we clean things. We clean a dish, we clean a plate, we clean a pot, we clean a room. All those things which we didn't want in the pot, all those things which we didn't like, they're all swept away by the waters, so the waters and the sewage are also carrying away. The things that were not wanted, the things that we didn't like, the things that are not good for the senses, the things that are not healthy, the things that are not helpful. So the waters are carrying that away. Also, there are bacteria, you know, and insects that actually thrive on the things that would kill us. And so we find that repulsive. We see that sickness is there, stuff that comes out of the body when the body is ill. All these things combined to make, you know, sewage and trash so obnoxious. Bad smells. You look at this flower, you smell a flower, it has a nice smell. Garbage has the exact opposite. It strikes our senses in the exact opposite way. And also within sewage and stool and refuse of various kind is unwanted things from society. And that we see more and more. Unfortunately, our world is becoming more and more full of these things. Plastic, paper bags, spoons, things that are used once and supposed to be discarded, things that wrap something, things that tied something, things that bound something, they all get discarded too. So all these things strike us as being very obnoxious, very unwanted. But in one sense, it gave me great hope. And now, don't misunderstand me, I don't think that the Dham should be cluttered with any more of these things, and I think actually as much as possible we should limit our own addition to these kind of aspects of the Dham. You know, I don't know if garbage cans are actually un-Indian, but sometimes I wonder, you know, there's hardly, seems like there's no garbage cans around anywhere because everybody thinks that the whole place is like a giant garbage can and you just throw anything anywhere. So that's maybe not exactly what it's not exactly what I'm trying to say. But it gave me great hope for one reason. That I looked at what's in my heart and I began to feel that the things that are in my heart are much more obnoxious than the stool and sewage that's flowing in the gutters. And if somehow this kind of sewage and trash can be in the Holy Dham, then maybe there's a place for my heart too. Maybe somewhere my heart can be purified in this kind of a setting. So that gave me great hope. And I felt that maybe somehow or another, after long enough, I can be purified too. And so with the help of the Vaishnavas and the process of devotional service, we can all go forward in Krishna consciousness and be part of that eternal lila, gradually making more progress toward it. So I'll end with that. And thank you all very much. All glories to all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord, and all glories to all the holy places, Vrajabhumi. Haribo.